Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello and welcome to this. It's the Ropey Dungeon back after Christmas. I've not done one of these for about 4 weeks, I think, but we have a very special one for you today. Thank you for following us on Twitter. Thank you for leaving iTunes reviews. They are massively appreciated. Just thank you for all of your interaction and continuing to support the show the ways that you do. Anyway, enough of that nonsense. Here is this week's interview. Hope you enjoy it. Right, well, I'm very happy to be joined by a guy who, if I interviewed him a few weeks ago, I might need to explain who he is. But I think he's a name on every England fan's lips now. It's Don Ormond. How are you, mate?
I'm good, and yourself? Thanks for having me on the show.
It's an absolute pleasure. Thank you for coming on. Let's start with the thing everyone's been asking you about, England. What do you know? And then we can move on to some interesting things.
I could pretty much say what Eddie says in the press is pretty much the feedback that I get. And, you know, what I think of it is, I mean, you can't complain when he's got a brilliant track record with the team, and you have to kind of back the national coach to know what he's doing. So, you know, I do say this quite a lot, is I've just got to make sure that I keep focusing on my role in Exeter, and whatever else comes is amazing, but, you know, I can't be too distracted by it.
Yeah, as hard as it is, you're absolutely right. It's just one of those control your controllables type situations.
Yeah, that's exactly right. I think if I focus on the wrong thing, you know, frustration levels may build and distract me a bit, but, you know, if I keep on doing what I'm doing, then, you know, I can only hope that good things come.
Completely agree. So anyway, what have you been up to today, and what's the vibe down in Exeter?
That's a pretty good vibe. You know, obviously we're getting ready for a massive game this weekend. So yeah, our training was a really good session today. You know, we'll treat this like a knockout game essentially, because, you know, the tables, I think with the way it all works out, is we have to try and get as many points as possible to just stand a chance of making it through to the quarters.
Yeah, do you know what? I think my favourite final from the teams that could possibly qualify would be you guys having a trilogy against Leinster.
Yeah, I know, I agree. I think many people would agree to that because, you know, I mean, they did really well coming down here, and it was a really good experience going up there and playing them there. But I think having a third go at it would, like you said, it would be a really exciting final, because I think you'd have two really good sides, and it wouldn't be about, you know, them being a better side or us being a better side. It would just literally be about two great games, or one great game of rugby with two good teams in it, and the result would speak for itself, I suppose.
Yeah, I completely agree. And it seems to me, I say this on my other podcast all the time, Exeter seems to be constantly learning. So you might beat them by, I don't know, 50 points 1 year, and then it'll be 30 points, and then 20 points, and 10, and then by the end of it, they'll be winning the final.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that statement. If you look at Exeter's rise from the Championship, that fits right in there. And the years I've been there, every year has been a new year where we've had to learn from the previous year. You know, we made the semi-final and the final, and lost in the final. Then we made the semi and won it last year. And then this year, you know, it's a whole new year where no one that's involved in the setup's been in it. So I think all the way up from the coaches down to the players, down to the support staff, and even the guys running the business behind, you know, like SW Comms and that, are all in new territory. And, you know, I think if we, like you say, we seem to be learning, and that is one thing that we make sure we all do is learning from our mistakes. And, you know, I think that'll make sure that we keep going to the top.
Is there a certain nervousness which comes with playing in Europe? Because I appreciate you've got to the quarters before, but it is sort of uncharted territory for the Chiefs.
Yeah, definitely. I think it's not so much a nervousness. Maybe in the past year or two on my first year, I think we'd qualified for Heineken Cup, and that was a massive year for the club. So there was definitely an air of nervousness. I think this year it is much the same, but it's not nervousness. It's just about getting used to playing big sides in an environment that no one's really had a lot of experience in, if that makes sense. So it's about learning from, if we go up then and we, you know, like Montpellier, we got the win.
Mm.
But we'd approach that in the same way that we went up to Leinster. And even though we didn't get the win, we definitely learned from it. And I think those are things, it's kind of money in the bank. So even though we lost, you know, I think we came away with a lot of positives from the game. I think that's how we've approached all our European games. And, you know, I think eventually we're going to get to the stage where, you know, there's not an air of nervousness or of reaching new beginnings kind of thing, where it's just something that, you know, we'll be performing the same way we do in the Prem.
Yeah, why do you think Exeter dealt with Montpellier, who is such a more physical team than almost anyone else that you'll see, yet struggled so much against Leinster?
To be able to put it down to one thing would be quite hard, but, you know, all the games we've played in the European Cup have been big emotional performances. If you look, I mean, they're all top sides that we're playing. So, you know, I think it's just about exceeding expectations. You know, when we did, we beat Montpellier away. I think it was their first game they'd lost in, 19 game consecutive games.
And it's an incredible game,
with
too.
Like a points. Yeah, and we didn't even realize that. And with 24 points difference is what they usually be winning at home. We can't really put it down to one thing. Maybe, say, Leinster were just, they were really on it, and they were maybe up for it more than we were at the home game, and especially in the first half. And then, you know, the kind of side they are and the way they coach, they'd be really clinical and leave it up to moments in the game rather than having to create, you know, some miracle thing, whereas they build in the correct way. And, you know, it's a good thing to learn from.
You're playing a team like Leinster and you're on the field. Is there ever a time when you think, crikey, we might be in for a long old day today, say 10 minutes in or 20 minutes in?
No, I think we enjoy it when the games are hard. You know, I think Montpellier was the same way. We all knew it was going to be a hard game, but we kind of stuck at it a bit longer than they did and ended up getting the rub of the green, especially away at them. And I suppose if you look at the home game too, whereas Leinster, I think we're a bit more, I don't want to say well coached, because they're both very well coached teams.
Yeah.
But, you know, they stuck to what they did quite well, and they're very similar to us in that. And that's why, I mean, the result it was a fair result, but it could have kind of gone either way because of the way both teams were playing.
Yeah, I think you're right there. I mean, not to put words in your mouth as such, but it's almost like Montpellier rely on individual performances, whereas Leinster are far more fluid. They're far more fluid as a team.
Yeah, and I think that you kind of know it in your build-up too, and it definitely it helps with your approach in the preparation of the game. And, you know, even though Nadolo had some really good tries against us in, you know, at their home, you know, we kind of managed to quash those individual moments of brilliance in the home game, and you could see the difference in the result, the scoreline more.
Now, I know you're busy doing what you're doing on the field, but how exciting was the Woodburn-Nadolo matchup?
Yeah, you know, you'd probably say two very completely different players, but both as just as effective for their team. And, you know, I thought it was brilliant to see how it worked out. You know, Woody is a lot smaller than Nemanja Nadolo was, but, you know, you didn't really notice the difference. And, you know, Woody, I think, showed some very high-class like moments in the game that, you know, his two tries to speak of were amazing, weren't they?
Oh, he's just come on leaps and bounds. I mean, he was good at Bath. You know, he was coming on, you know, as a replacement, or he might not have quite been first choice. Since he's been to Exeter, he's like a brand new player.
Yeah, I think it's the case with a lot of guys that come here, you know, and that's credit to obviously the way the coaching is set up, where, you know, they kind of instill the confidence in the player that perhaps they don't get in any other place. You know, Ollie got some good opportunities to play, to get some starting, like game time when Knowlesy was away with England, and, you know, playing with, and he just, yeah, like you say, he really showed his class. And I think it's got a lot to do with how the coaching is set up, and, you know, they really try and make players confident rather than try and beat them down kind of thing, or worried about what their weaknesses are rather than focusing on their strengths.
Now, I'm probably going to embarrass myself a little bit here by getting the information wrong, but is it Exeter that you work in groups to analyse each other's games, like small groups of four or something?
Not necessarily each other's games. It's No, not really. Like, you kind of work, you look through your game and you can chat to the coaches or you can chat to other guys that are in similar positions. But there isn't like a Monday meeting sit down where four of you chat about each other's games. No.
Oh, right. Well, I'll quickly mark that and I'll edit it out of the podcast.
No worries.
So, on the balance of things, Exeter, then, like, how much are you guys trying to work out what you're going to do next game, rather than working out how to stop the opposition, if that makes sense? How much of your study is about you guys other than the opposition?
Well, you know, I think that's a very good question. But obviously, we have a certain way of playing, and a lot of our preparation is just about making sure that we know what we're doing and our approach, and the focus is on us. But it is obviously in every team environment, you have to worry, or not worry, you have to prepare yourself for what the opposition brings so that you're not surprised on the day.
Mm.
So, you know, different teams, if they're similar to us, will probably have less preparation. If they have moves that are really off the cuff or less structure, you know, you kind of go through those and make sure you're aware of what causes them to be like that or what triggers they use. But, you know, apart from that, you know, there's a massive focus on making sure that we're the ones that are right in our game.
Yeah, and you can definitely tell watching Exeter, there is a certain way you play and there's a certain plan, and it comes out week after week.
Yeah, definitely. And as you can see, I mean, the way we stick to what we do, and even in dying minutes of the second half, we'll still be doing what we've done in the first few minutes. And you know, that's something that we really try and focus on.
Yeah, it's a very strange thing, actually, that one of the most exciting parts of watching Exeter is when you do the most boring things. Like when you're in that 5 meter zone and you've got that relentless pick and drive, it should be boring. It's actually exhilarating.
I think it's gotten to the stage where, you know, like you said, it should be boring, but because we're so successful at it, I think it's got quite a bit of hype because people, you know, everyone wants to see when you're at the top, everyone wants to see you fall down. So I think it's quite exciting when a team manages to put in good sets of defense and keeping out. Pretty much, I think, what Leinster managed to do against us. And, you know, they really took it. And I think those moments are quite exciting. And, you know, even when we score, it's kind of like, okay, well, it's well worked. So like you say, I mean, it is very exhilarating watching it.
Yeah, now, just changing tact completely. Now, you're from Zimbabwe, yes?
Yes.
Okay, so you were born where? Is in the capital?
Yeah, in Harare.
So tell me about your background then. Are both your parents Zimbabwean nationals?
So my dad is a Zimbabwean, and my mom was born in or lived in Harwick, in just outside Pietermaritzburg in South Africa. And then I think he went over to South Africa and they met there and then went back to Zim.
So how old were you when you moved from Zimbabwe then?
12 turning 13.
Got you. So the majority of your rugby was obviously played in South Africa.
So, you know, I mean, there was a lot of lessons and stuff I learned in Zim with my junior rugby and some really good coaches that helped me. But the majority of my playing time in terms of years in playing was obviously at high school and at Maritzburg College in South Africa and then at the University of Cape Town.
Are you still in touch with many people back in Zimbabwe?
Surprisingly, yes. It just happens to be the way. I mean, you know, Zimbos are very proud of where they come from. So the more people you can get in touch with, the better. And I've got a lot of people that I went to junior school with that I'm in touch with, you know, even my grade 3 coach. So
really?
Pretty much my first 2 years of playing rugby, and she coached me for most of my junior school career. I'll see her whenever we go up to the Leicester games, and, you know, and like it's something, like it's a very good relationship that we keep going.
That's really nice. And I'm sure there's other things to talk about when you get in contact with your Zimbabwean friends. But what is the rugby scene like out there at the moment? Do you know?
There is a lot of talent, and it's unfortunate that there aren't better systems in place that can ensure that the talent stays there. But, you know, I think they're just as proud of, you know, if you speak to Zimbabweans, they'll be just as proud of how successful guys are being around the world and representing Zimbabwe in what they do than if they were actually in Zimbabwe representing them.
Yeah, well, I mean, there's a Zimbabwe back row that's just won the Premiership.
Yeah, and then there's David Pocock, who's arguably one of the world's best loose forwards too. So.
Absolutely. Well, I've always had the idea of setting up like a Zimbabwe-based Barbarians, uncapped, so everyone can go about getting their caps and making their living elsewhere. But I think it'd be an attractive proposition.
Yeah, I think there's been a few journalists that have put a team together, and it's quite fascinating to see what team. I mean, I think we struggle in one or two positions, and they've thrown in some like retired players, but yeah, there'd be plenty of youngsters that could fill in that position too. I mean, the forward pack that I've seen them put together is pretty decent.
Well, what's the rugby situation there like at the moment? Is there still much being played?
To be honest, if I gave you a proper answer, I wouldn't be speaking from any like facts or something that I know.
Mm.
But there is rugby being played. You know, there's rugby when I was there was played by everyone, by most people. And I think it still is today. There's some big like Zim rugby schools that pride themselves on how good they are. From the national side, from the national team's point of view, I think they do have a team, and they have been playing qualifying matches. I think for the last World Cup, they nearly qualified, but they lost in the last match. So there is, you know, rugby structures going on there.
Yeah, well, you just talked about big rugby playing schools there. Tell me a little bit about the school that you went to, because when I was researching you, it seems like you went to you know, the South African equivalent of Harrow or Sedbergh.
I wouldn't know what those two teams were, to be honest. But yeah, in South Africa, there's obviously a few regions or provinces, or as you'd call them here, probably counties, that have big schools.
Mm.
And then the one we were in, you know, we had quite a fierce competition, but it is a very traditionally very strong rugby school that would. You'd hope would be in the top 10. It gets a bit more diluted now because there's a big talent pool in the high schools. But you know, when I was there, it was definitely one of the schools that when you go there, you can speak to anyone from the different provinces and like, oh, it's a good rugby school.
Yeah.
So yeah, they've got a good reputation.
Well, is that the same school Kevin Peterson went to?
Yes. Yeah.
Any good at rugby?
Kevin Peterson, he was way before my time, so I wouldn't be able to tell you that. I think he was pretty much focused on his cricket, and you could see why.
Yeah, absolutely. So were you playing rugby there with anyone else that made it into the pro ranks?
No, not in my year. There's guys that play in the provincial region. There's one or two guys that play in the provincial teams back in South Africa. But, you know, there's a few guys that were just a bit after me. So Jesse Creel, he went to the same school. He's the Springbok center.
He's pretty good.
Yeah, he's pretty good. So he's probably the highest achieving current, well, younger generation, old boy that's playing rugby. You know, back in there's like Joel Stransky, the fly-off for South Africa, Butch James, Peter Grant.
Wow.
A lot of the fly-off factory at that time.
That's pretty cool. I'm always amazed, actually, how big school sport is in South Africa. It's far bigger than over here, and also university sport.
Yeah, I think the school sports. It's big, you know, because I think the rivalries are built up, you know, by the supporters and by the schools, and I think it creates a really good environment for like a competitive environment amongst the schoolboys. And then the universities have started a month. Like I was lucky enough to be involved in from the beginning, but they started. You know, the NFL has like a Friday night lights kind of competition.
Yeah.
They started one that was the top eight universities, rugby universities in South Africa, and they made it on a Monday night. So it was the Monday night lights kind of equivalent of NFL.
Mm.
And that's ended up being quite a good stepping stone for quite a few people that haven't necessarily made it to the professional teams or have been studying and quite fancy a go at rugby. And, you know, I think it's a good success story for a few people.
Yeah, I quite like the South African system, how they kind of how you can step up in the pathway, because there's a definite gap between like university rugby and then Currie Cup and then Currie Cup up to Super Rugby.
Yeah, and then even within Currie Cup, there's competitions that run that bridge the gap between so there's university rugby and club rugby, which are pretty much the same. So there's the university competition, and then there's a club rugby system which takes over from when the university competition stops. And so you have club rugby level, which you don't have to be a student. You can be any age playing. Then the next level up is what used to be Vodacom Cup, which I think they may have stopped now.
Yeah, I know the competition you mean.
And then there's Currie Cup, but I think the Currie Cup split into two divisions, and I'm not quite sure how it works now. But yeah, there's like three or so stepping stones that you can play your rugby at before you get to like Super 15 level.
So when was it apparent to you growing up that rugby is something which you're going to be?
Normally being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Very successful at, and this is how you're going to make your living?
That's a tough question, because the way I kind of approach things is I just enjoy it for what they are, if that makes sense. And you know, I really enjoyed rugby. And in fact, I got to the stage where I got my degree, I'd done my studying, and I'd pretty much given myself the last year to make it in rugby before I started to work.
Wow.
And get a new job and, you know, just play rugby for fun. And I got my break when I was, 23 or so. So it'd be hard to pinpoint a moment where I said, this is what I want to do. But you know, I think I've always managed to keep my rugby at a level where I really enjoyed it. And it was never really something that I put a lot of pressure on myself to succeed in. And I think that's probably worked for me.
Yeah, because I was looking through the dates of when you played for different teams. And it did seem like you kind of got into various teams fairly late on, because you see lads now, like Sam Simmons, who's coming into the first team at 19. I mean, you seem to have got, you know, as you said then, got your break at 23.
Yeah, no, it's unreal how young the guys are these days. But, you know, there's a lot of academy structures that are in place that probably weren't available to us a few years ago. But I always had, lucky enough, a strong influence from my mom, and she was not pushy, but she'd always say, make sure you get your academics in line. So it'd be good to have a degree under your belt before you try and go for kind of your sports thing. So that was kind of out of school. I was always focused on, you know, I had a few opportunities to go to like rugby academies and all that, but I chose to go and get a degree at the top university and play rugby alongside that.
Yeah.
And then once I finished my degree, I kind of gave myself a year or two to focus in on rugby. And so it ended up working out, but that's why I was pretty much a late starter in my professional career, was because I put my studies first.
Do you know, I see all these players coming through now, Marcus Smith and Sam Simmons, and I say those guys, they are a rarity because they're so talented.
Yeah.
But I do kind of think they're missing out a little bit on playing a little bit of amateur club rugby or university rugby before they go to the next level.
There's contrasting views. I'd agree with you, and I could never replace the memories that I made. The people that I've come across with my amateur rugby, my university, the influences that I've had in my career, you know, I think those are things I would encourage probably my son to do. But then again, if you ask Sam and Marcus if they have anywhere, they probably wouldn't, because, you know, they're cracking it quite early in the scene, and if they can keep playing at the level they are and keep building themselves, you know, they're going to have a 10 to 15 year rugby career that's actually going to really be beneficial to them when they stop.
Oh, I completely agree. I mean, it's a short career anyway, so the longer you can be a pro, the better. I mean, I would just say like it doesn't upset me, but you know, I feel a little bit sad, I guess, when I speak to people who've left the game and it actually turns out they didn't really enjoy it that much anyway, and it's probably because they've been a pro since the age of 20 and they've almost fallen out of love with it because it's no longer something you do for, you know, a hobby. It is a job.
Yeah. I imagine there are people like that, but I don't think anyone playing rugby at the moment that be making a living out of it would admit to that, because, you know, it's not an easy way to make a living. Obviously, you have to work really hard, but
yeah,
you know, there's better money in professional sports than if you went onto the job market at 20 and try to earn a living.
Yeah, you're absolutely right there. Now, in that year that you had, when you were trying to make your mind up, do I give this another, you know, another year's go, or, you know, or do I go to work? What would you have done if you hadn't have made it?
Good question. I mean, obviously make network connections through rugby. So, you know, I'd hopefully have been able to utilize those connections. I mean, I had a degree. I didn't have a specific job, like career that I had in mind. So, you know, I was very open-minded. That's why I think I didn't have any pressure on myself to kind of make it right then or there, or I'll go into, like, say, being a psychologist or whatever. But, you know, that, yeah, I didn't really have put too much thought into it, because I suppose I always believed that I would make it, if that makes sense.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Although I quite like the idea of Don Orman's psychologist.
Yeah, that's what I got my degree in.
Is it really?
Yeah. But I think I'd have to study a few more years if I wanted to do it as be a psychologist by profession.
Have you thought about what you're going to do post-career, or is that a little bit like tempting fate?
I'd say it is a bit tempting, like tempting fate, but, you know, there's one or two things I work on, and then there's some really lovely people that you meet through rugby that can recognize who you are and, like, probably give you some opportunities that you wouldn't necessarily have made if you weren't playing rugby. And, you know, those are the kind of relationships you work on, and you know, hopefully something comes of it.
Now, this is a sort of tenuous link, I guess, but do you ever look back at your psychologist degree and try and kind of figure out what sports psychologists are talking about, or what they're trying to get out of a team?
Oh, all the time. I think not the problem with it, but I think there's no set structure to what a sports psychologist does, so it's a very open market. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, each sports psychologist would approach it in a different way, and I think that's probably what makes what you can tell between a good sports psychologist and not, is because the ones that are good are still in it and you know about them, and the ones that aren't doing it anymore.
Yeah.
I do find it very fascinating, because I think there's a huge part of a mental side of rugby that probably is an untapped market, if that makes sense. But because there's no set structure, as if you tell a player this, he will be like this. It's each individual is different, and that's the fascination about the mental side of things.
Just tell me a bit more about that then.
If you put it simply, if you put it down to motivation, if you have a team of 15 people, you know, it's never going to be one size fits all. Mm-hmm. And that's where I find the mental side of it comes in. And I think that a good coach that gets a successful team environment is a coach that is able to understand most of people's personalities and knows how to treat them and knows how to intermingle them. And I think this really shows, it comes to light in a place where you get an extremely talented player that fails in a team, and everyone's like, well, how are they failing? And, you know, it's because they're not even thinking about the mental side of what that player may be going through or how he approaches the game, whereas they just look at, you know, physical stats and that kind of thing. So that's why I find it really fascinating, is because, you know, we don't know how to deal with the mental side of things. It's all, you know, if you try one thing and it works, you stick to it.
So when you say it's like there's a lack of structure in sports psychology, do you mean that they're using like a one-size-fits-all approach to everyone, or it's based, you know, on more of a macro team level rather than a micro individual level?
No, I'd say that's not me saying I've seen what they do and I don't think there's much structure.
Yeah.
That's my opinion and how I would approach it if I was a sports psychologist, because if you go into, say, clinical psychology or developmental psychology or something like that, and you choose that as a profession, mm-hmm. there's a degree you can study, there's things you have to know to be able to do it.
I see.
Whereas a sports psychology, you have to just be able to understand people, but you could get a guy that's never played sports that's a good sports psychologist.
With you.
And that's where I mean it's really unstructured, because, you know, it relies on an individual and the mental side of things that you have to, you know, find what works for the individual, rather than knowing that if you go in with, you know, these three things, they will work for every person you talk to, which it's not like that, if that makes sense.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. So what motivates you then?
I'd probably say there's a lot of things that motivate me in different ways, and the things that keep me going mostly are my family. I'm a big family man, so I've obviously got two kids and my wife, and my mom's staying with me at the moment. And, you know, that's one thing that'll keep the same every day. You know, you wake up and your kids, well, your kids wake you up, not you wake up.
Yes, tell me about it.
And instead of me going, oh, geez, I'm exhausted about it, like these kids are just, well, not getting along with me. It's just you can wake up and I enjoy the fact that my kids are waking me up kind of thing. And, you know, if you're going through a bit of a dip, you can just spend time with, I can just spend time with my kids and they'll pick me up immediately kind of thing. So, you know, that's kind of a big motivator for me.
Excellent. Any chance that we're going to see a young Armand taking to a rugby pitch?
Lots of people ask me this. I'd like to think that I'm giving him the freedom of choice to do what he likes. But in the same time, if, you know, he loves watching my rugby now. So, you know, if I do a good enough job, I wouldn't hold him back from playing rugby, if you put it that way.
Yeah, well, he's got the right genes for it. Let's put it that way.
Yeah, thanks, mate.
Now, when you were in South Africa, be honest now, when someone said to you, hey, Exeter Chiefs want you to come over, what did you know about Exeter?
To be honest, I didn't really watch much rugby at all. So
really?
I'd probably, even English rugby, I don't watch rugby that much in terms of, I'd probably seen Leicester and Wasps play in a final for about 5 minutes, and that was about as much
really
as I'd watched English rugby, because, you know, I mean, I'd only been in the professional kind of sports scene or rugby scene for like 1.5 years.
Yeah.
So my focus was purely on, I used to watch Super 15 all the time. But it was never, there wasn't much English rugby played on the TV where I stayed. I stayed in residence at university with a whole lot of other guys.
Yeah.
And it was always about Super 15 or the Springboks playing like international games. So when, you know, an Exeter had just come up, I think they'd been in Prem for a few years, but, you know, I didn't know much about them, but there were people that I spoke to that did know about them and couldn't speak highly enough of it. So, and, you know, they've more than lived up to that.
So a lot is made of the Exeter recruitment process, and rightly so. I mean, just look, you know, look at what you guys have done. What was your initial conversation with Rob Baxter like?
It was over the phone, because I couldn't come all the way to South Africa, to England to speak to him. But, you know, he basically just, I think he'd done a lot of his own research at the time. So there wasn't much that he would have asked me. He was pretty much just interested in what I was about. And he was asking me questions about what I would like if, when I came to Exeter. So, you know, he was very open to, you know, just making sure that, I suppose, our views were aligned, that I didn't have these completely different ideas in my head of what I would expect when I got to Exeter kind of thing. And I guess I answered in the right way.
And I guess, well, what did you expect from Exeter?
To be honest, it wasn't about what I expected from Exeter. It was more about, I've always been about what I can do for a team. So I just wanted to make sure that I was coming to an environment where I had coaches that were honest with me and would help me with my game, which, you know, everyone said they would be. And, you know, they have been. So, you know, it was more about what I could be doing for the team if I came over and not wasting their time. That's just how I operate. So,
excellent. Now, I'm going to get a little bit geeky about rugby now. Now, you play all across the back row. I've seen you in, well, 8, 6, 7. Noticeably, it's 7. Now, you're a big fella, and there's a lot said about what a 7 should be and how they play. So how do you use your attributes to play that to play that position?
I suppose it's more, if you think about any team, it's just about what the coach wants. So certain coaches would want a smaller, more nuggety type 7, whereas I think at Exeter we're lucky enough that, you know, I suppose depending on the team we're playing, we can change what kind of composition and loose forwards we have. I've basically just stuck to what I'm good at and stuck to my role in the team, and whether I'm playing at 6 or 7, it doesn't really change, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, that's kind of the formula I stick to, because at the end of the day, I'm getting chosen to play in the team because of what I do, and that's what the coaches are happy with. They don't expect me to change my role if I'm at 6 or 7.
Yeah, well, I know what you're good at. Well, I think I know what you're good at, but I always like to ask players what they think that they're good at. So what do you think that you're good at?
It's hard to say. It depends on the game, I suppose. But I'd say my primary, I mean, if you look at most of the trios that I, or the other guys that I play with, it's just that my primary role would be in the lineup, because, you know, that's what I'd be good at. And, you know, if I wasn't able to form in the lineouts, then someone else could do that job.
Do you know, probably like one of the biggest compliments that I can give you is I don't actually think of you as a lineout forward, because you do so many other things.
I think that comes more down to how we're coached, you know, because I think if you look at 1 to 15, we're all expected to be able to carry the ball and be skillful enough with it, and all work hard and play your part in it. So I think it is a compliment, but I mean, I don't think that's any different to any of the other guys that play in the team.
Yeah, well, I mean, there is something very special about Exeter, which no matter what combination of players that they pick, you all seem to know your role and you all know exactly what you're doing.
Yeah, I think that's probably a compliment to the coaches, and that's when guys probably give their best, is when they're doing what they know they can do, I suppose.
Excellent. Right. Well, you've been more than generous with the time, Dom. So I'm going to let you get off and enjoy the rest of your night. But before you do, give me a prediction of where you think Exeter are going to finish, both in the Premiership and in the European Cup.
Wow. Just putting it out there. Well, I mean,
I'm going to write it on my whiteboard, take a picture of it and tweet it as well. Don Allman's predictions.
As in finish, so, I mean, you want a specific position in Prem, as in one or top four?
No.
I'd obviously go
for it.
I'd obviously like to say we're going to finish at the top of the log in Prem. And then with European Cup, it's so hard. So I'd like to, we obviously aiming to get to do as well as we can. So I'd also say we'd like to be in the final, but I'm not sure where on the log we'd have to be to get there, if that makes sense.
Yeah. Well, I think you're going to get to the knockouts of Europe, and you're going to be extremely dangerous once you're there. And I'm pretty confident that you'll finish top of the pile in the Premiership. Whether you'll be champions or not, I don't know. And if we did know, we wouldn't play the game.
Exactly. That's why we love rugby there.
Exactly. Don, where can we find you on Twitter or Instagram or any of those social media outlets?
They're all pretty much the same. So Don_Armand on Twitter. And I've actually just started up a Facebook page, which I'll be getting out to anyone that I've linked them all. So I think you'd be able to pick them all up. Instagram's the same. I think it's also Don Armand. Don_Armand on Instagram. And then they'll be linked to my Facebook page, which I've just made up now. So yeah, that's where you can find me.
Excellent. Well, Don, you've been a fantastic guest. Best of luck with the future. And if it's down to me, you'd already be in the England squad.
Thanks very much. I appreciate that. Cheers. Thanks for having me on the show too.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight, and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.